The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for Dungeon Masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
Beyond and hello, everyone. My name is Jonathan Dornbush, and this is Podcast Beyond, IGN's weekly PlayStation show covering all the latest and greatest in the world of PlayStation, including the tournaments PlayStation has purchased in the recent past and how they went, as well as some other updates we'll be talking about this week. I'm very thrown because I can hear myself so well that I'm just going to stop talking now. I'm joined this week by Mitchell Saltzman. Mitchell, hello.
Hello, hello.
It's good to see you. Well, thank you so much for joining us this week.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm excited to talk about Evo. I've been itching to talk about my experience ever since I got back. So this is gonna be awesome.
Happy to have you on. And we're also joined this week in studio by Jada Griffin. Hello, Jada.
Hello. I'm happy to be here. I'm really mad that you didn't throw to me first because I was gonna make a joke about Mitchell being stuck in at Evo still because he didn't win out of his brackets.
Yeah.
So I was gonna really just gonna just you
well,
know.
Now the joke is there.
Oh yeah. This is actually the Mandalay Bay hotel room. I've been here for about a week. I feel like I should make it my home.
That's fair.
Airdropped in all your stuff.
I mean, Jada, you can at least joke about the fact that Mark isn't with us this week.
He called us or messaged us 10 minutes before the show. It's like, hey, I can't go because they're shooting the pilot for Chainsaw Man out front of my house. And we're like, that's an anime, so that doesn't make sense, Mark, but all right, whatever.
That's what you get from Mark.
That's how you know that Mark has been replaced by the body snatchers.
Exactly. we all know he's still stuck at the top of Splash Mountain.
100% still. Please send pictures of Splash Mountain to Mark once again.
Please do that again. Thank you to everyone who played along. Please do it again to that man while he had to ditch us this week. But no, we do have plenty to talk about this week, including some PS Plus updates. The PlayStation Plus Extra lineup for this month has been fully revealed. Some actually series cast updates about The Last of Us TV show. Delays, betas, things like that. And we're also going to jump into Evo and fighting games in general as well, because I have two wonderful experts with me. A person who doesn't know fighting games at all, but watched 20 minutes of Evo, and I could do that. Anyway, before we get to all of that, though, let's jump into just some quick news hits. The first one I want to mention is the fact that PlayStation Plus Extras updated, August big sort of reveal of games has been put on the PlayStation blog. These PlayStation Plus Extra games are coming on August 16th. These are for both Extra and Premium members. We previously knew about the Yakuza series coming. Specifically this month, Yakuza 0, Kiwami 2 are all coming on the 16th. Dead by Daylight is also coming. Tom Clancy's Ghost Recon Wildlands, Bugsnax, and then Metro Exodus, Trials of Mana, Uno, and two Monopoly games, Monopoly Madness and Monopoly Plus.
Yo, I love me some Monopoly.
It's great.
I grew up on Monopoly. That
I did
was,
too.
Me and my cousins, we'd stay up all night playing. We would pause the game, wake up in the morning, I would rob the bank, and then we'd continue playing.
Nice. My grandpa, rest his soul, was the cheating banker. He was legitimately, every time we played, we, after a while, had to stop letting him be the banker or sit next to the banker.
I actually never cheated, but that's always a fun thing. Anytime you ever mention Monopoly, you have to bring up that, because there's always somebody who plays the banker who cheats in the family.
Oh, yeah.
And I know my little brother used to do that when we'd play, so I always had to be the banker.
Yeah. But anyway, two Monopoly games if you want to play those, but also, of course, the beginning of the rollout. We know the whole Yakuza series is basically going to be coming to PlayStation Plus. The older games are coming at some point in the future. We know Like a Dragon was part of the basic PlayStation Plus, the Essential tier. I hate those names so much. Mitchell, you're a Yakuza fan, aren't you? Or am I crazy?
Yes. Play Yakuza. Everyone, play Yakuza. This is the perfect opportunity.
I like how he just said yes, because I was like, yes, Jonathan is crazy.
I mean, yes, that also. either question you were answering, you were correct. This is always the big drama and debate, and we did have some answers for Jada last week, but so Mitchell, I'm going to put you on the spot as well for an extra answer. Where should Jada start playing the Yakuza franchise? Zero or Kiwami?
Oh, man. I personally prefer to play Zero just to start at the beginning. But, you know, I think the argument for playing Kiwami is that there's kind of like that. It's almost like the intended way to play through it, because you learn about a character in Kiwami, and then you kind of learn how he got there. And, you know, that's definitely something that is definitely appealing. But for me, I prefer to just start the story at the start and, you know, learn about that. You know, learn about the characters more with the next iteration. But yeah, you know, the Yakuza games, they're kind of the perfect games to be on a subscription service, because of the fact that, you know, I do truly believe everyone should play these games to see what they're doing, because they're doing something that I think very few other video game series do, which is tell a long-running story around, like, centered around the same characters, and, you know, watching these characters grow over the course of, you know, 7 games. That said, they're imperfect games. You know, there's a lot of repetition in the combat. There's you know, the games don't evolve quite as much as you'd hope over the course of the whole series. So, like, you know, it's hard to really give that hard recommendation of like, oh yeah, like, spend, you know, $300 on this whole series. But if you can play the whole series as part of a subscription service, it's like a no-brainer, I think, which is why I think people get so passionate about wanting people to play Yakuza.
Yeah.
It is a very special video game series, and again, there's really nothing quite like it.
So I've got two things to say to that. One, so your recommendation, we were totally testing you, because everybody in the audience said Zero first and then Kiwami. So congratulations, you passed that.
I have seen people say play Kiwami first, though.
Well, so I was going to say I started with Kiwami.
Yeah, because you're wrong.
Well,
I'm just kidding.
Hey, wonderful actor of Midnight Mass and iZombie, Raul Coley, also tweeted you should start with Kiwami. So, you know, there's a difference of opinion.
Well, Morty from Rick and Morty says, I really think you should just, you know, start the story at the beginning and not, like, do all this jumping around stuff.
The prequel after. Anyway, go ahead. I think either way is very fair. I'm not a Yakuza, you know, expert by any means.
100% is. You should see his Yakuza tattoos.
Yeah,
that's neither here nor there,
for a future show.
Second, so you're saying they don't advance as much through, like, the 7 games. Is it, so it's like a sitcom of TV where the characters are, like, the same age through, like, 7 seasons, basically? Do we see
I actually was talking more about the mechanics.
I know, I'm just messing with you. I was just trying to have some fun. But yeah, I was just curious. I've been watching a lot of Bob's Burgers, and, like, I'm, like, 10 seasons in now, and I don't think they've celebrated the kids' birthdays once.
Yeah.
But they've celebrated, like, their mom and dad's birthday a couple times, but the kids just never get birthdays. And I think that's...
I mean, honestly, they don't deserve them. Have you seen those kids?
You know, even with Mark gone, we somehow got to a TV conversation. Right. Yeah. Bob's Burgers is great, though. But anyway, yes, you can begin your Yakuza journey. I've seen even people say, like a Dragon is a good starting point if you don't want to go all the way back to, if you want something more modern, because it's a bit of a, like, a reset character-wise. So however you get into it, it seems, I think, like, the lineage of Beyond, especially since I've been on it, whether it's you, Mitchell, or Max, or other people, like, play Yakuza is the thing that I seem to...
It's our new Beyond logo?
Yeah, play Yakuza. We're not sponsored. Hashtag not an ad. Anyway, so that's the lineup for this month, in addition to the 3 PlayStation Plus Essential games. No mention, as of right now, of any other premium games, so no other older games, which is a little bit of a bummer. Mm-hmm. We're still kind of waiting to see what the, like, PS1, PS2, PS3 support really ends up shaking out to be on this service. Thank you. But we'll see where it goes from here. But not a bad place to start if you need some games this August.
Yeah.
Anyway, moving on from there, just to mention really quickly, to talk about TV, actually, HBO's The Last of Us cast has grown. We officially got casting news about Henry and Sam, the brothers who star in probably one of the most famous excerpts of that first game. Henry will be played by Lamar Johnson, while his younger brother Sam will be portrayed by Kevon Woodard. Excuse me, I was going to put a double W in there. But the two of them will be playing Henry and Sam, as well as Graham Greene and Elaine Miles will guest star as Marlin and Florence, two new characters being added to the series. Not much is known about them, not really a bunch of information. We do know that apparently they'll be meeting Henry and Sam in Kansas City rather than Pittsburgh like they do originally in the game. But, you know, I think that episode, I would assume, I assume they're going to be an episode focus. It's probably going to be a very harrowing one to go through. I can't wait to see that. But I do also like the sense of, like, new characters being cast, because I think for me the best potential here is making a show that expands on what we got in the game and isn't just a strict retelling.
Yeah, I mean, there were so many segments in the game where we just kind of, when anytime it transitioned from season to season, like, time passed. So, like, we don't know what happened in those time period gaps. So it's perfect opportunity to explore this.
Yeah. So should be cool to see. Moving on from there, just to quickly catch up on some of the other news, Marvel's Midnight Suns, one of the I think probably bigger franchises that's known with Marvel in there, was delayed. It was originally coming out at the beginning of October. It's now been delayed to an uncertain date. 2K basically said it will be coming out before the end of their fiscal year, which ends at the end of March 2023. So it's possible the game gets delayed by a month. It's possible it gets delayed by 5 or 6 months. Apparently they want to put the finishing touches on the game and really make sure it's set for launch. They also, though, did say that that delay is only for the PS5, Xbox Series, and PC versions. The last gen, the PS4, Xbox One, and Switch versions are going to be delayed to an even later date. So you'll have to wait a little bit longer. Mitchell, were you excited for this one at all? Are you much of a tactics person? Or
yeah, you know, I'm not like a super hardcore tactics person. But, you know, I enjoy XCOM. I enjoy the Disgaea series. You know, I think, what's that indie game called?
Slay the Spire?
No. Into the Breach. Mm-hmm. Into the Breach is, like, one of my favorite roguelike indie games. And I think Midnight Suns is, you know, there's so much room for expansion, I think, in the tactics genre. And I think Midnight Suns is doing something interesting with it, in that they're using these Marvel characters. It's fun for Firaxis, who you know, do the XCOM games. I think they said at some point, like, they're not using, like, you know, percent to hit kind of chances. So I'm kind of just curious as to what a Marvel superhero powered tactics game looks like. And granted, I haven't really looked too much into it. I've kind of wanted to go into it blind. But yeah, I'm a little disappointed, but also, you know, understanding of the delay, you know. And I'll definitely play this whenever it comes out in 2023.
I'm thinking we're going to get a January release date.
Yeah.
It feels like a January game to me.
That feels reasonable, if only because you start to get into, especially March, and things just get so sacked. And not that, like, a Marvel game can't succeed, but, like, a Marvel game that is in a more niche genre probably deserves a little bit of time on its own. And granted, moving out of October is then probably a smart move. But yeah, January feels like a good bet. I feel like the only thing we know January is Dead Space, and I think there's one other thing in January.
Yeah, but I think this feels like a very end of January month kind of game. Right before, like, the whatever the big launch is going to be 2 weeks into February, like we usually get.
Yeah. Oh, forgive me. Here we go. Yeah, it's Dead Space Remake on the 23rd and then Forspoken on the 24th. So it could even be February.
Yeah.
We don't have any games announced for February right now, but we'll...
Oh, that's crazy. Right. Well, I'm sure we'll start seeing those announcements rolling around. We've got Gamescom and a bunch of other stuff around the corner.
Yeah.
That month is going to fill up real quick.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It always does.
I think it's one of those things where we're just seeing people be smarter about announcing dates rather than have to move them. So I think it's, you know, obviously we've seen so many delays because of the pandemic and everything, and I think devs would rather, especially going into next year, so many big games are anticipated, they'd probably rather have a date that they feel like they can hit than say something and then have to delay. I think that's why, like, that's what happened with God of War.
Yep.
We probably didn't see a date for a long time because they really wanted to make sure they hit the date that they're going to say.
Yep.
So, yeah.
And after that date passed, they were like, all right, let's announce it for later.
Yes, exactly. though, speaking of things you will be able to play this fall, you know, obviously there's a lot of hubbub and discussion of what the future of Call of Duty looks like after Activision is acquired by Microsoft properly. But until then, we're still getting Call of Duty on PlayStation. We expect there will still be some Call of Duty presence afterward. But regardless, we do know that if you're a Call of Duty fan looking forward to Modern Warfare 2, the first of its open betas for Modern Warfare 2's multiplayer mode will occur from September 16th through the 20th and will be a PlayStation exclusive, while the second, from September 22nd to the 26th, will take place across all platforms with crossplay. Early access will be offered to those who pre-order the game, and you can get full details on how to access the beta on the Call of Duty blog. But there's also going to be basically a Call of Duty Next live stream event that will show off Warzone 2, Modern Warfare 2, and Warzone on mobile. So if you're a Call of Duty player, which obviously there are still a lot, even though it's had a bit of a down year sales-wise, a lot to look forward to coming soon. Call of Duty Next will be on September 15th. But yeah, that's pretty much the news for the week. Everyone's, I think, a little bit of a quiet lull, big news-wise, before Gamescom hits. So we're going to take a very quick break, and we'll be right back with more Beyond.
This episode of Podcast Beyond is brought to you by NordVPN, a great way to protect yourself online while also improving your overall experience while enjoying cyberspace. Are you tired of streaming shows, movies, or sporting events being unavailable in your region due to draconian restrictions that are based on completely arbitrary geographical boundaries in physical meat space? Well, switch your virtual location to a place where that's no longer an issue. The same goes for shopping. You can get the best possible deal on subscriptions, flights, hotels, and other goods and services like that from websites that like to play favorites with certain territories and currencies. Meanwhile, encrypted traffic protects your data from hackers, viruses, malware, phishing sites, and other harmful hitchhikers of the information superhighway. Though really, it's more of an information autobahn because there is no speed limit with NordVPN. It is the fastest VPN in the world, so there won't be any buffering or lagging, and it'll stop your ISP from throttling your bandwidth. Isn't that nice? One NordVPN account can be used across 6 devices, which is great. My wife has been using our account to watch all sorts of awful British reality TV shows that aren't available here, like Argument Island or Half Naked Idiots Fall in Love, and everyone's favorite, The Worst People Just Got Married, Let's Hear Them Talk About It. Shows that are so bad they're blocked in our part of the world for our own good, but luckily, NordVPN allows her to trick the internet into thinking she's in the UK, so she and her awful friends can shriek and howl and cackle at the TV while I'm trying to relax. I've been using my VPN too. You know what I've been using it for? None of your business. Yep, that's right. And thanks to NordVPN, my data is safely encrypted, all bundled up in a weighted security blanket of incomprehensibly complex math problems, and nobody can tell what it's doing under there. Data, you do your thing. I'll leave you alone. 1 month of NordVPN coverage costs less than a cup of coffee. Coffee can't protect you from cybercriminals unless you throw it at them or pour it on their computers, and you'll probably get in trouble for doing that. So get NordVPN instead. To get the best possible discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/pobeyond. That link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Again, that is nordvpn.com/pobeyond. And now, back to the show.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for 2 women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it. Or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Beyond and welcome back, everyone. Jonathan here. We just got through sort of the news of the week, and I think maybe now it's time to turn our attention to an event that just passed. Evo.
Oh, I thought we were talking about like my past pet's like funeral, but
you know, Jesus,
I love it.
Oh no. Oh, I see how the words I said made that phrase come to life.
Yes, but, 100%.
Oh my god. We need like a Frankenweenie scenario to get us out of this in like a happy way. Anyway, no, we're talking about fighting games. I'm so completely thrown. Thank you, Jada.
You're welcome. Chaos,
we
baby.
Agent of Chaos.
Yep, with Mark gone, you're filling that role with glee.
To be fair, like I've always attempted, before I even came on Beyond, I was like, I'm going to come in and bring that that Agent of Chaos, and then I discovered Mark was already doing that.
Sure.
So I just kind of like relinquished it to him. I just like, I'm not even going to bother because
that's fair.
Then we won't get anything
there
done.
There would just be chaos.
It would, yeah, it would be nothing. It would be too much.
And you know, chaos works sometimes, but when there's things to discuss, it doesn't, you know. anyway. Yeah, let's talk about Evo and sort of the fighting game scene at large. Obviously, if you didn't watch Evo, if you're maybe not a fighting game fan, or a fighting game player, I am not one. I have played a bit of Smash Brothers in my life, and other than that, every time I pick up a controller to play a fighting game, I get demoralized very easily because I'm usually playing someone who's better than me.
Sorry.
And it's okay. I can strongly remember when I was a freshman in college, my roommates, they were all into Marvel vs. Capcom 3 at the time, and they would always, when they needed a breather, ask me to jump in so that they could take a break and have an easy win. That was the role I played.
I love the Marvel vs. Capcom series, but 3 was so brutal for being able to find like infinite combos and for at least for different patches where and different friends were like, I got hit once and I would like, and I'm good at fighting games. I would get hit once and it's like, oh, well, that character's dead. Sometimes, oh, two characters are dead. Like, that's it.
Just can't do anything about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Marvel vs. Capcom is not a game to jump into with friends if they are much better
than they're all
them.
But you would think it would be. I think that's part of the problem for me is like, oh, a Marvel fighting game. Like it's broad enough that I should be able to get into this, right? And I just got my butt kicked. I thought it was cool, but so through all my life, other than really Smash Brothers, I've not really gotten into fighting games. I am playing a little bit of Multiverses, and it seems like I'm not alone. I think, you know, it's still an open beta technically, but the game has hit, I believe, 10 million players is the most recent estimate. It's got a huge launch. It's very well received by the fighting game community. I think we all went into it kind of being like, is this going to be a Space Jam New Legacy, but for video games, where it's going to be kind of just an embarrassment of IP being thrown together? But it seems like the reception's been really warm. It's doing really well. I have a lot of thoughts about it as like a newcomer to it, and I'm sure you both do as fighting game fans. But I kind of want to talk about just like the state of fighting games and recommendations from both of you as more fighting game experts for someone who might see all this and be like, how do I get into fighting games more? But Mitchell, I do want to start with you attended Evo, competed in a bit of Evo. How was it for you this year?
Oh my God. It was such an amazing experience. You know, Evo is one of those things where I think if your exposure to the fighting game community is just through like Twitter news articles and playing against assholes in Mortal Kombat who don't know how to turn off their mic, you know, you might have like kind of a bad view of what the FGC is like. But once you get into Evo and you're within that community, it's really one of the most positive kind of groups of people that I've ever been around. Like there were so many moments where like you know, people who forgot their cable would, you know, ask someone on the other side like, hey, can I borrow a cable real quick to you know, plug in? And like it's like a no-brainer. There was a moment where I was playing against someone in a match and I thought I had won. There was something that distracted me off to the left, and I looked over, assuming that the round was over. The round wasn't over.
Oh, no.
And rather than just, you know, beat me up and take a free round win, he, like, tapped me on – stopped moving, tapped me on the shoulder. It was like, hey, dude, we're still going. And I was like, oh, my God, you didn't have to do that. I would have been like – if you actually, like, finished the round, I would have been like, oh, man, that was my bad.
Yeah.
And just like, you know, moments like that where it's just like, you know, you're just around people who love this thing so much. And it was just such a positive experience to be in that. The FGC is awesome. And I think, you know, fighting games are wonderful. And I strongly encourage anyone to, you know, who has ever been intimidated or, you know, thought that they couldn't do it, that this is the best time to get into fighting games because there's so much material out there to help you learn. There's a bunch of free fighting games that you can jump into without any kind of investment. And you can learn and kind of grow at your own pace. So yeah, I think the fighting game scene is awesome, and going to Evo just kind of, you know, really cements that.
was, I know this was the first time the show was back in person after a little while. Was anything like demonstrably different about it? I think especially, you know, there were concerns coming in of like, oh, now PlayStation Cone's a thing that was sort of multi-platform. Is that going to cause any problems? It doesn't seem like it did from the outside, but did the show feel like Evo that you knew while you were
there? Yeah, I mean, it still feels like the Evo that I knew. I was actually surprised that, you know, the addition of PlayStation didn't take away from that kind of like grassroots kind of indie feel that Evo has. It's still just, you know, a bunch of tables with PS4s without controllers. You have to bring your own controller. All the PS4s were weirdly like the Star Wars PS4s. They have like, you know, the Empire symbol on it. The Rebel Anchor or whatever. You know, they weren't PS5s. There were no PS5s in the
not a surprise.
Yeah, it's hard to find them. PlayStation has trouble.
The one thing I will say about like the FGC and fighting games in general, like it's a very different environment when it comes to playing online against other people and then playing in person at like Evo or a local tourney. Like it's night and day difference. When you're playing against people online, generally you're going to get the trash talkers, you get the people who don't have any respect or anything like that. But when you play it like locals, like you'll often find people who's like, hey, do you want to spar after the match? Or like we got some downtime, like do you want to run a couple matches back? Or like, hey, like you know, I can't tell you how many people I've met just in my history of playing at local events and becoming longer term friends with them and just playing online with them and setting up sparring groups to play with them. It's like, it's a completely different thing when you meet people in person at fighting games. Not to say everybody's perfect, but
sure.
It's, you know, there's a lot more good apples than bad apples when you play in person versus online, which is usually the opposite.
It's a crapshoot.
Yeah.
Yeah. And on that note, one of my favorite like memories of the event was like, you know, I literally got whooped by my first match in Guilty Gear. And you know, after the match was over, you know, we fist bumped and he like, you know, looked at me and was like, dude, your pressure as Giovanna is like really, really good. Like you had me on the ropes. I know it didn't seem like it, but like your pressure is fantastic. And I was like, oh my God, thank you.
That's awesome. Yeah.
That was so nice.
It's easy to just kind of after a match move on, but for them to take the time to actually say that. Yeah.
And just, you know, I had a funny experience where I went to the Arc System Works booth, and you know, a dude hopped on and, you know, asked if he could play me, and he was also a Giovanna player, and he was really, really good. but also to the point where like he was seeing stuff that I was doing and like telling me, hey, you know what, you can do this instead of this, and you know, when you knock down, like this is probably the best way to, you know, continue your pressure, or you know, after you do this, I can do this. But if you know that I'm going to do this and you can do this and punish me for it. And it was just like, you know, getting like a free training session for my character against this other person. And then funny story about that, you know, we ended up talking and we're like, hey, are you playing in the tournament? And we're like, yeah. And we found out we were both playing in the same pool, basically.
Oh, wow.
So he's basically training someone who could have been his opponent like later on. And it turns out we were opponents later on. He was the person that ultimately knocked me out.
That's so funny. And now you're both married together.
It's mm-hmm. now we're happily married.
Yep.
Congratulations, Evo, the place of miracles.
That's what happens. But no, like that, I feel like that totally speaks to your point, Jada, of like, and I think that's also for me of like someone who's hopped on occasionally to a fighting game that I like try to invest in and then go online. And then immediately it's just like, if I'm not good, I'm just going to get called the worst things by children. But like in person, yeah, there's more of a reason. One, I think that helps just like break down the barriers of like there's good and fun trash talk, but I think it then does encourage people to help each other out. And like you were saying, form mm-hmm. these bonds. And it's cool to see the event come back in person like that, because I know that was a big thing people were waiting for and hoping for. Jada, you watched a bit from home.
Yeah, I watched all of the grand finals for all the games or whatnot to see all the big moments, and then kind of surfed around to see what videos surfaced for other matches and stuff like that, and caught some really good ones. So
nice.
Yeah, it was an amazing set of grand finals this year. Mm. Like highlight to the Street Fighter 6 or Street Fighter 5 grand finals, which was just, you know, the best possible send off for that game, because this is going to be very likely, I would say 99% chance, the last time Street Fighter V is going to be at like a major, you know, Evo style competition.
Yeah.
You know, IDOM's run through Loser's Bracket is just going to be something that we look back on the fighting game community forever.
I was so cheering for him. I knew it was a replay. I didn't know who had won because it didn't have it listed in the description, thankfully. So thank you, whoever I was watching. Man, IDOM, like, he plays Laura, and my partner plays Laura, and I was like, oh, here comes the combo, because I was so used to getting put through the ropes by my partner's Laura combos. I was just like, oh my goodness, this is gonna hurt.
You knew that pain well.
I knew the pain so well, and then for him to lose, I was just like, no, I was rooting for you.
I had not been watching earlier that day, and then I went on Twitter at like, I don't know, it was like 8 p.m. our time or whatever, and I just saw like 50 tweets being like, oh my god, IDOM, this is like craziest Evo thing ever. And I was like, okay, let me go check out what's happening. And I was watching the final between IDOM and Kawano, and yet, like, even as someone who doesn't know a thing about like fighting game technique or, you know, ways to actually parry and combo and get out of things and counter and whatnot, I was like, this is just an incredible run. Like, the amount of pressure he was able to put on, like you're saying, like, I can tell how that character can be scary just like watching his play. And it was just so cool to see that level of skill on display, but like both of you were saying, also like celebrated in a very positive environment. Like, even hearing the announcers talk through it and praise it, it was like, oh, this is a special thing for a lot of people.
What's funny is that, like, IDOM is the only person that I know of who uses Laura at that high of a level. She's really slept on,
mm-hmm.
As far as Street Fighter characters go. And yeah, the way that he plays her is just so, so scary. And yeah, I've also played against Jada's partner, and like, I was also having, you know, the nightmare flashbacks of getting put in the Laura blender.
Oh man, it's just like, you just don't know what you can do at certain points. It's just like, I just have to block, and then you get grabbed, and then you're like, okay, what do I do? Yeah. I guess I lose the round. That's what happens. I lose the round.
There were so many rounds where it was just like, oh, IDOM just bodied him and just could not like stop. Like, there was nothing that could be done to stop that pressure. Yeah. I do have some questions for both of you about fighting games and getting into them, and especially some stuff going on, but we'll talk about that right after this break. Beyond, and welcome back, everyone. We're talking about fighting games and the thrill of Evo, but also just the thrill of the scene right now. You know, Mitchell, before the break, you were saying there's never been like a more exciting time to be able to jump into fighting games. And it does feel like they're really having a moment. The scene is having a moment. There's a sense of like positivity around it, a lot of excitement around upcoming releases. Obviously, Street Fighter VI next year, the success of Multiverses right now. I kind of want to talk to both of you about a little bit of sort of your thoughts on like jumping in right now, and I guess maybe starting with the success of Multiverses. Jade, I'll just start with you. Have you been playing a little bit of it? Like, what are your general thoughts on it?
I got my 100th win yesterday.
Congrats.
Thank you. I've been maining Garnet and Harley Quinn. It's a blast. I actually really like it. There's still, you know, a few bugs, a little bit of latency issues I've noticed with a couple matches where sometimes I'm like using like a dash move or a teleport and I'm end up back where I launched from, and so some weird rubber band mechanics, but that's probably more lag than anything. But yeah, no, I think Multiverses is very solid. It's a great alternate to Smash if you don't want to jump into Smash, which already has a very established scene. And what are we at, like 80 characters? I can't remember what the roster
Something
is for
crazy.
Ultimate.
Like A2, I think.
Yeah, and so Multiverses is great. All the characters are broken in different classes, which kind of helps with you know, picking like your play style. Like, if you want to be, you know, more damage oriented, you can go the assassin, but you're also easier to be KO'd, and it explains all this stuff. There's a huge like glossary that tells you everything, like, okay, if you're shocked, this is what it does. If you're ignited, this is what it does. If you're charmed, this is what it does. Like, it tells you exactly what all these things do, and it breaks it down so well for each of the characters. Like, Multiverses is such a great introduction for a platform fighter that I definitely recommend people to check it out, and, you know, give it at least, you know, a couple hours to see how you like it. It's free.
Yeah, the separation between sort of like class of character and with them being such like iconic characters for me to glom onto, it's been really easy to find things of like, oh, I kind of have started to figure out a little bit of how to use a more attack oriented person, but I also like being the support person because it is primarily like you can do 1v1, but it is primarily established as a 2v2 fighter. And so to have that back and forth to like have different strategies based on who you're playing really comes into play when you have a partner in there. Mm-hmm. Mitchell, how have you been feeling about it?
I think Multiverses is awesome. You know, the issues with, you know, the teleportation while you're playing online. You know, every fighting game has to handle latency in a different way.
Yep.
And you know, it's a reality that sometimes you're gonna have bad matches against people who have, you know, bad Wi-Fi, or, you know, they're playing on hotel internet, or something is going on. They're downloading, you know, gigabytes of whatever.
They're hooked up to the McDonald's out, you know, yeah, around the block, you know.
I only play online when I'm at a Starbucks.
That's so. Totally makes sense. That's, yeah. I mean, how else are you going to get your, you know, your drinks while you're playing?
Yeah. Am I supposed to have a drink and then wait to play the game? No. I have to do it in line.
Same time.
Anyway, Mitchell, go ahead.
So, yeah, and, like, you know, one of the things about Multiverses is that even though you have those moments where you're teleporting around, the thing that doesn't happen is that you never feel a delay in your inputs.
Correct. Yes.
The button you press will always, you know, reflect on screen. And this is one of the things that a lot of fighting game people talk about. It's rollback netcode versus delay-based netcode. A lot of games previously had delay-based netcode where it felt like if you were in a bad match, you'd feel like you're you know, going through mud. Like, you'd press a button, and then, like, 2 seconds later, it would happen. Your movement wasn't one-to-one. And it's just, like, an awful experience to play online in those kind of matches. Even in some of the worst matches I've had in Multiverses, it's never been absolutely unplayable. It's been a lot less fun compared to, you know, the matches that are good connections. But you can still work your way through it and still, like, you know, fight your way to the finish.
Yeah.
So I think that's one of the important things to note, that even though some of the, you know, the matches that you might have in Multiverses are weird, like, you'll have just, you know, teleportations randomly happen, you'll hit someone, and then all of a sudden they'll be right back in front of you. You know, it could be a lot worse, especially in a free-to-play game with 10 million players.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, no, 100%. Like, I don't want anybody to take away from that, like, that it was a bad experience. Like, I literally put in, like, 120 games since Saturday or Sunday. Saturday. And so, like, that was maybe 5 out of 120 matches where I had some type of issue. So, like, they're doing something right. So,
yeah. It's been pretty positive for me, but yeah, I'm someone who hasn't had enough experience to know if maybe a glitch was just a thing I did badly, or if it's an actual glitch in the game. But, like, you know, Jada, you had mentioned something, not specifically, but as you were describing the game, like, talking about the fact that it's, like, a platform fighter. And I guess that's, for me, is it safe to say that there's essentially, like, platform fighters, 2D fighters, and 3D fighters? Obviously, there's more nuance, but is that sort of, like, the general buckets things get thrown into?
Yeah, I mean, that's a safe way to kind of, especially for anybody who's, like, new into the scene, like, there's obviously a little bit more you can dive between them, and different games kind of cross sometimes.
Yeah. Like, obviously, this is a 2D game, but yes. I sort of mean, like, the standard, you know, like, what I think of when I think of a 2D fighter is, like, Street Fighter.
Correct. Yeah, Street Fighter is generally a 2D fighter, whereas Tekken is a 3D fighter, and then Multiverses and Smash would be a platform fighter. Other platform fighters would be like Brawlhalla and a few others like that.
Yeah.
They have, like, arena fighters, like, you know, a lot of anime games, I think, are considered arena fighters.
Okay.
There's definitely a lot of, you know, ways you can break down the different types of fighting games.
In terms of, I guess, like, jumping in for people, does it feel like it's safe to say typically, like, platform fighters are probably the most, like, friendly to jump onto, or is that, like, a misconception, I guess, of the IP that typically gets thrown into them? Because for me, it's, like, you know, Smash, Multiverses, Brawlhalla, a lot of famous franchises in there.
I think platform fighters fit nicely into that kind of bucket of easy to play, really hard to master, kind of, you know, thing that a lot of games usually try to strive for. You know, they are games that are typically very simple in their controls. It's usually a direction and a button to do an attack, a direction and another button to do a special attack. And they also kind of usually follow the same kind of thing of, like, if you get knocked off the stage, you can use a special move to come back on. Like, I think that's a thing that a lot of people who just jump in don't really piece together really, really quickly. The fact that you have to use, like, your up B to give yourself, like, you know, an extra vertical boost, or forward B to use another, like, horizontal, you know, momentum change or something like that. Well, yeah, I would say that's a pretty fair assessment that, like, you know, platform fighters are definitely a good entry point. But also, you know, some of the things are very different when it comes to platform fighters versus 2D fighters. Mm-hmm. You know, approaching the this is going to be using FGC jargon, but approaching the neutral game in a 2D fighter is very different than the neutral game in a platform fighter.
I know
mainly because of like the mobility involved with a lot of
Mitchell. You want to break down neutral?
Neutral basically is imagine a like a boxing match, and mm-hmm. you know the match just starts, and both fighters are in a position where no one has the advantage. They have to do something in order to get to a spot where they can hit the other person. And once they do land that, you know, land that first hit, then they have the advantage because, you know, if the person is blocking, they are on defense.
Gotcha.
So neutral basically just refers to a state in which neither player has an advantage, and they need, and like playing the neutral is essentially finding a way to get in and put yourself in an advantageous position.
Yeah, so it's like, you know, there's different things you can do when you're in the neutral stage at the start of a match. You can try poking down with, like, ranged attacks. You can use your, like, you can, you know, wait for your opponent to do a move. You can move around to bait your opponent into thinking they have an opportunity and then punish them if they miss. There's a lot of things you can do in the neutral that kind of can affect how the match starts to play out.
It's funny because my strategy normally when I go into a match of multiverses is just hit them. Just go hit them.
Oh, I mean, that works. That works with multiverses. Yeah. It does very well. I honestly, there's a lot of times where a lot of matches where I win decidedly and I'm just like, I just don't even have to think about what I'm doing. I'm just like, I'm just going to use these two or three bread or butter moves. One of the things I really like about multiverses, especially for welcoming newcomers, is newcomers. You know, they're the friends of cucumbers.
New cucumbers.
Yeah. That's what we're calling newbies into multiverses from now on. It's going to start trending. New cucumbers.
I'm picturing like a baby cucumber mascot. It's like it has all the merch that Baby Groot does. It's just huge.
It's going to be great. I'll open it up on my shop. Perfect. For newcomers, is that their tutorial system that they like. They flash it right at the start, like, hey, complete this tutorial and you unlock Wonder Woman. So, like, that's already giving you an extra character to, like, try out and do something different. And it teaches you a very good variety of the stuff, the basic stuff you'll need to know for, like, recovering from getting knocked off the stage and stuff like that. Like Mitchell was talking about, that a lot of newcomers just don't really understand all the options that you have when it comes to recovery after being sent flying. So I really hope that other fighting games kind of pick up some of the lessons that Multiverses is laying down, and it continues to help just grow the FGC and fighting games in general better.
I think the big thing that Multiverses is doing right now is, of course, it's free to play. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a conversation that, you know, a lot of people are having right now. Like, is the future of fighting games free to play? Because it kind of makes sense for this genre. Right. Yep. Now, the model for fighting games is you release a base game, and then you keep it, you know, you keep it, its life cycle going with seasons. And those seasons add up, man. By the time you're through a fighting game's life cycle, you've probably spent, you know, somewhere between like $150, $200 on one game.
Yep.
Wild.
And yeah, it's pretty wild. And, you know, I think fighting games could learn to grow if they found a way to make that base game, make it free, and then dole out the seasonal content basically as like a piecemeal kind of thing, similar to how, you know, Fortnite does it. And we're going to see if that model is going to be successful when Project L comes out, because, you know, any company that knows free to play, it's Riot.
I can't wait for Project L.
Do we have a rough?
Yeah.
I know they released an update. There's no sort of
There'll be one more big update on it later this year, they said.
Okay.
But we don't have any type of release date. The most recent is they announced that Alawi, the Kraken Priestess, is going to be joining the roster. And so I'm very excited for her. And, you know, they just also did a visual update for Udyr, and I forget his moniker, but I have a feeling with his new like visual upgrade in League of Legends, like he's probably going to be added as well to Project L. That's my next guess for a character that's coming, because he just seems like a good fit for a bruiser type character to be in the roster.
Yeah, I think Project L is going to be one of the most important fighting games in the history of fighting games. And it's really going to decide that game's success or failure is going to dictate the direction of fighting games in the future.
Well, speaking about, I guess, the future of fighting games, as someone who kind of wants to get into them, I have a couple questions, but we'll talk about that right after this break. Beyond and welcome back. We're talking about fighting games and oh my God, how bad I am at them. But no, I do want to ask, you know, you both of you were talking a little bit before the break of like looking ahead to some exciting fighting game stuff, talking about the scene right now. I am curious. So I'm playing Multiverses. I got really hyped on the idea of fighting games coming out of Evo. I see something like Street Fighter VI on the horizon, and I see kind of what they're doing of, I know they have sort of the alternate control scheme that's a little bit easier for newcomers to grapple with. I see some of the like the ways they're trying to get people into fighting games who may not have had it while also being a good game for, you know, longtime fans. Is, you know, from both of your recommendations, maybe Mitchell, I'll throw to you first, is it something where like I should maybe just wait for Street Fighter VI to come out? Like, does jumping into a fighting game like Guilty Gear Strive that looks amazing but has been running for a little while, or something that's even longer running like Dragon Ball Fighters, which looks amazing but has been going on for years, does it make more sense to kind of just wait for the right moment of a new game launch, or are there like ways to jump in the interim as a fighting game newcomer?
I mean, there are certainly ways to jump in the interim. Like, the thing about jumping into a fighting game as it comes out is that everyone is kind of starting on the same level, so you're able to get a more kind of natural learning curve of like playing against people that are at your level, playing against a large pool of people who are at your level, and then you kind of like ramp it up from there. Whereas, you know, there is that problem of jumping into a fight, like a game like Guilty Gear Xrd. If you jump into an online match of Guilty Gear Xrd, you're going to be playing against people who are, you know, very, very experienced with that game, and it's, you know, not going to be the best learning experience. But one of the things that I will say, I think one of the best entry points in fighting games right now is a game called Fantasy Strike, and it's a game I reviewed at IGN. I can understand people not immediately jumping into this game because the art style is not the greatest. It doesn't. You know, it doesn't scream we have a lot of money when you look at it, but it is such a perfect fighting game for people who are just getting into the genre, because it is that simple thing of there are no complicated inputs. It's all just press a direction and a button. It's very specifically designed to teach you the context of why you should be pressing the buttons that your character has. And it's just very intuitive in the way that it's designed. There's no, if you're looking at the video right now, you'd see that the life bar is segmented. So the way that works is that instead of there just being, you know, a life bar that gradually goes down, every hit does one tick of damage. Some hits do two. And it's very focused on understanding frame advantage, which is basically just knowing when it's your turn to press a button and when it's not. There's a lot of really smart things that it does with like making your character glow a certain color to let you know, like, hey, this is a grab. You need to jump. It's just a very smartly designed fighting game specifically for newcomers to the genre. And it's also very deep. There's a lot of really deep mechanics to it. That's always the one that I recommend people start with when they say that they want to get into fighting games and they don't want to, you know, just jump into the deep end.
Jada, what about from your end? Is there any that like comes to mind as a good recommendation for newcomers? Is there like, you know, one on the horizon like Street Fighter or something else that you particularly think would be a good option?
Yeah, I think the ones I always try to recommend are the ones that have the most robust tutorial system. Mm-hmm. And I think Mortal Kombat 11 is probably one of the more recent ones that had a very in-depth tutorial system where it really walks you through the moves. And Mitchell, you've played a bit of Mortal Kombat 11, right?
Oh yeah, I've played more than a bit.
It's been a minute since I've been on there. Did Mortal Kombat 11 have the, like, when you go and you're doing like the trials, didn't it have the option where you like show me what this combo looks like?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it does.
Yeah, so like it's really cool because that's one of the biggest things for me because, you know, whenever I'm gearing up to like compete in locals for different games, I go into the training mode for 30 minutes to an hour each day before I start playing online and for like to warm up. And being able to go in and do trials when you're learning the trials, learning the combos and stuff, like it's very frustrating if you don't know what the combo is supposed to look like. So it can tell you like, oh, punch, high punch, low punch, you know, and then jump and then continue your combo. Mm-hmm. But if you don't know what that looks like you're just like, I guess I did it, or even worse, it's like, okay, I did all those inputs. Why didn't I get credit for this trial? So when any game that has those trials that where they actually show you that what the combo looks like, those are the ones I always recommend looking out for.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Mortal Kombat 11 also has a really good ramp up in its tutorial. Like it does a good job of teaching you the basics and then, you know, slowly introducing you to the higher level concepts like frame traps and what jailing means. It leaves no stone unturned. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think, you know, I always say the perfect fighting game is out there. It's just spread out in a bunch of different fighting games. Mm-hmm. And if they all just, you know, pooled it all together, you got like the, you know, the netcode of Strive, the training mode for Mortal Kombat 11, the ability to, you know, practice in Street Fighter V while waiting to be queued up into a match. Mm-hmm. You know, the perfect fighting game could exist. We just gotta put it all together.
And of course, the Shaggy of multiverses.
Yes.
And yes, the Shaggy of multiverses. The Ultra Instinct Shaggy.
Yes.
To be specific.
Of course. And I mean, speaking of Mortal Kombat and upcoming games, obviously Street Fighter is one we're all looking forward to. But we gotta find out what NetherRealm's working on eventually, mm-hmm. right? That's gotta be on the horizon. I would assume.
I have my prediction is we're gonna learn about it at the Game Awards.
Mm-hmm.
And there's going to be another big reveal event early on in 2023, and it'll probably be out sooner than you think.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that.
That was what they did for MK11 originally, right? If I'm not mistaken. Isn't that the exact place?
I'm pulling all this from nowhere, Jonathan.
No, I'm just saying there's clearly a precedent, so it feels like you're probably on the money, given that we didn't hear anything at Evo or like anything other, you know, more recently at earlier shows. Probably won't at Gamescom. It seems like Tekken might get a Gamescom wink based on some hints.
Awesome. I imagine we'll get a Tekken, like more of a Tekken nod at TGS.
Gotcha.
Probably would be my guess.
Gotcha. It's something that like I have very much an eye on Street Fighter, I think, because it's the series that I know of the most. Mm-hmm. But it's mm-hmm. good to hear sort of these other options as someone who's like, can I jump into something right now that'll help me learn? Is it silly to jump into a game that's been around for 5-6 years? And even something like Mortal Kombat, it's like, it's been around, but if it feels like there's good enough training there, it still might be worth it.
I think the big thing is finding one that kind of fits your style of gameplay, because mm-hmm. Mortal Kombat, mm-hmm. their combat is very different from Street Fighter.
Yeah.
Like, they're just the way the combos work. Like, Mortal Kombat is kind of like you have to kind of input all your inputs for your combo, and then it just kind of goes. Gotcha. Where Street Fighter is more kind of like button by button.
You have to press the button at the right time.
Yep, it's more timing focused.
Gotcha.
And so like I'm more of a Street Fighter person, but I do like playing Mortal Kombat from time to time. So like I dive into both because they're both excellent games.
Yeah. It's go ahead. Were you gonna say something?
I was just gonna say, and you know, I think Street Fighter is not as challenging. If your exposure to Street Fighter is only watching it played at Evo, I think you'll be surprised to learn that it's not as hard as mm-hmm. as they make it look.
Yeah.
You know, the combos in Street Fighter, the effective combos in Street Fighter are usually just, you know, button special move.
Yep.
That's really all you need to know.
It's all about learning your bread and butter.
Yeah. And you can add on more situational combos from there. So I think people who get intimidated from fighting games because of like, you know, combos, like you could learn these combos.
Yeah.
I'm sure that there's people who are like looking at fighting games and being like, I can never do that. But they can also like play piano. And it's like, if you really put in the effort, I think you could do it.
Yeah, well, it's something that, you know, I've been personally excited about. I've seen some other excitement around it, so it's good to hear from both of you that it does feel like it's not something that you know, you've missed your chance, you've missed the boat on fighting games. There's always an opportunity to jump in, whether it's on the horizon or an older game. And of course, you know, seeing the joy around it, I think from Evo was a really big moment for myself and a lot of other players. And especially with it being now co-owned by PlayStation. Mitchell, I know this is a hope of yours as well, but man, I just hope we get PlayStation All-Stars 2 sometime.
I just love the fact that every time I am on Beyond, yeah, we talk about PlayStation All-Stars 2. Let me get my whiteboard. I'll be right back.
He's got the 60 characters. We're good to go. No, I will never stop beating that drum. I want a sequel to that game so bad. That's one of the few fighting games I actually did put a bit of time into.
I want PlayStation All-Stars 2 to be a 3D platform fighter.
Oh.
I want them to add a third dimension for it.
That'd be cool.
Interesting.
I'd be into that.
Yeah,
let's make PlayStation All-Stars 2 be the Power Stone revival that we all demand.
Exactly.
Right now.
There we go. See, Mitchell knows what I'm talking about.
I know the name of that franchise, at least.
Yeah. Mitchell, you got to play a bit of Street Fighter 6, right?
Yeah.
Did we talk about that on the show in the past? I don't remember
Not
if we
Mitchell
had you
playing
on
it, but if Mitchell, if you have brief thoughts before we move on, just of what you experienced.
It's real, real good.
There you go. First,
there we go.
I was gonna say folks and Furt, you heard it here first together, and it turned into Furks.
It's, you know, just it's Furks and new
and
cucumbers.
Those
newcomers
are all the fans that we've thought up. The words we miss say. Well, I'm really excited to hear more about it, especially as we get closer to that game's launch and maybe one day hear about a PlayStation All-Stars 2. But we'll talk about games in the future that we want to play at some point. But speaking of games this week that you can play, before we talk about some other stuff, I got a chance to sit down with some of the devs from Cult of the Lamb, the new base management / roguelite action game that's really cute and adorable, but also really dark in really funny ways. We spoke about the creation of the game, some of their thoughts on the different gameplay mechanics in there. Rather than blabbing about it, I'm just going to throw to that interview because it's a lot of fun. Beyond, and welcome back, everyone. Jonathan here with a very exciting interview for y'all, or at least I think it will be, because we're talking about a game that I am very excited about. It comes out this week on August 11th. That's Cult of the Lamb, which I have been playing and really, really enjoying. It's a very special, unique game that I'm excited to get into with two of the team members behind it, and that is Julian Wilton and Jay Armstrong. Thank you both so much for joining me today. Hello.
Hello. Hi. Hello. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, it's great to be able to talk to you.
Yeah, I'm so excited to be able to speak to you about this. I've been looking forward to Cult of the Lamb for a while. I think kudos to you and the team for just making this both the most like adorable and strangely bizarrely dark game. Like the combination of themes there, I think, just works so well, and I just like had to know more about it. So I'm glad I can talk to you both to find out a little bit more and hopefully tell the audience about that stuff.
Maybe. Great. I think that description would like fit any member of the team as well. Like dark, adorable, but also a bit kind of dark, kind of suits all of us. So that's probably where
it
comes from.
That's good to know, because I do want to kind of get into it, but I guess just to start, for people who don't know, I'll try to do my best and feel free to just jump in and completely correct me if I say it stupidly. But you know, from my time with Cult of the Lamb, it's this really cool combination of roguelike sort of runs and action gameplay, as well as a base management sim building scenario where you are a lamb who is essentially leading a cult, and you're recruiting new members as you go along. You're helping to build up the base of your cult and to strengthen the belief in that cult and the lamb along a journey that has some broader implications as well that I maybe don't want to spoil for people who haven't jumped in yet. But it's adorable in the character design and I think the art style and everything, and then it has these very dark, you don't shy away from sort of the blood sacrifice, I guess, that you think of when you think of a cult, I suppose is the best way to put it. I'm curious, you know, you were saying it's sort of maybe representative of the team members, but like, where did the decision to have, I think, such a disparate or dissonant kind of like tones come into play? Or was that just kind of there from the start as the idea was coming together?
Yeah. Wow. That was a good description to start. Like, so well done. It's probably better than I could pitch it, to be honest. I think for this game, we really wanted to go a bit darker and kind of go on our previous game. It was called The Adventure Pals. It was very bright, colorful, kind of more like an Adventure Time thing, very random. But because of that, like, it kind of got a lot of attention from people and kind of thought it was a bit of a kid's game. So with this one, we kind of wanted to prove him wrong. We're like, all right, let's make it dark. I love horror films. I love like a lot of this occult themes. I'm really big fan of, yeah, like Midsommar and Hereditary and things like Over the Garden Wall, where they're kind of quite cute, but also have this depth of like creepy underlying tones that are going on. We just kind of started exploring it, really. It did take a while to kind of get there, trying out different ideas. Like we definitely went with like trying to make it more, I don't know, a bit Bad Boy originally, with kind of making it this game about running a hell and you're a demon. But like we always just kind of went back to like, I mean, I can only draw cute characters, so it always ended up a bit cute. So it was always, yeah, a bit of a struggle, especially early on, like trying to get these enemies and stuff to look quite creepy. But yeah, I feel like kind of got there in the end. And then through the lamb and the animals, we got to go crazy with making them cute. But then the enemies were like, yeah, tried to make them a bit more creepy.
And the great thing about like making things so cute all the time, which Julian is, and Jim are both so brilliant at, is that we can get away with, like, as you said, dark stuff. So there's all sorts of like horrible things that you can do, including like chopping up your followers for meat and then feeding it to your other followers. But because it's so cute, you don't realize how awful you're being until you actually say it out loud. So like being cute gave us a lot of license to push the darkness. And maybe if it was, you know, gruesome and realistic, it would we wouldn't be able to get away with such horrible stuff.
I mean, I think it certainly does, you know, for the tone of it. It's funny to me, like, cult sort of like focus is such a big thing in movies and TV documentary. Like, it is one of the things you see 50 Netflix documentaries for every month at this point. But I guess I didn't think of like, oh, what would it be like for a video game? And the idea that like it would be fun to build up that cult if they were adorable creatures. But you're right, it like kind of lets you get away with it, where it's like, well, but they're so cute, I just want to help them do the awful kind of things they're doing. But, you know, like along the lines of that dichotomy, I guess, I think what's really cool then that also, and I do want to talk about the themes of all that, but it also does translate to the gameplay, where you kind of have these two facets of the game that you're going back and forth between. I know you were mentioning the Adventure Pals a little bit and sort of what type of game that was. What, I guess, interested the team about either kind of genre that you're dipping into here or wanting to try out new genres, or like the intersection of these two? Where, like, how did the interest in those come about?
I think that came about, that was the first piece really, before we even decided it was going to be a game about a cult. It was going to be mushing, you know, the base building thing and the roguelike thing together, and just kind of smashing those together. And the cult thing kind of came later and was turned out to be, we tried, like as Julian said, many things to kind of, how could we like cohesively bring those two genres together? And the cult thing turned out to be like the best way to do that. But it came out of a like, you know, again, like our previous games, we had like this sort of linear story. And once you'd done that level, you know, you couldn't really replay it. And we were seeing, you know, these two genres coming out that were very separate, but they both had this, like, especially, and RimWorld was like the big inspiration for the cult side of the base management side, where you could get these emergent stories where you could play it 100,000 times and have a different story every time. And that was super exciting for us. And then again, the roguelike, you could do the same thing as well. You could, you know, like games like Enter the Gungeon and Isaac, you can just play and play and play and play and have a different story and experience every time. And so, yeah, we just thought, let's be super crazy and take those two things and smash them together.
Yeah, it was very difficult though, actually trying to put them together and then connect them in like a gameplay loop that was kind of fun. But yeah, as you say, it was kind of through the followers, through having these followers, it really just connected the two sides of it. And kind of, we tried to focus the whole game kind of about them and kind of your journey through them.
Having the biggest, one of the biggest challenges was having one side feed into the other, feed into the other, feed into the other. And there weren't a lot of like reference points for doing that. And so we had to do like a lot of iteration, a lot of experimentation. Like, how can we make sure that getting more followers means that you become stronger in the dungeon, and getting stronger in the dungeon means you become stronger in the base side of things. And that like took a lot of iteration. And I think we only figured it out about 2 or 3 weeks ago, really. more like 6 months ago, I think, when it all kind of clicked into place. Yeah, a couple of days ago. I think we're still figuring it out now, to be honest.
Actually, I just had an idea for you guys. If you could throw it into the game real quick, that would be great.
Yeah.
Oh boy, now I'm on the spot. I have to think of good things. Well, while I stall for time there, one of the things that I did want to talk about of the way that I think the game really cleverly pulls things in together, at least for me as someone who's really gotten into the roguelike genre over the last year or two, is sort of the runtime, at least early on, you know, in the game. These aren't, you know, hour-long runs like some roguelikes can go. They're briefer, they're quicker, there's a really great pace to them that allows you to not be away from the management sim for too long. Was that like a deliberate choice to keep them a little bit shorter, especially as you're getting into things, to help the player see both sides of the game as much as possible?
Yeah, definitely. We tried it both ways. We tried it both ways, and we just found that you would go for a long, long time, and then come back, and everyone was starved to death and dead and ill, and that just wasn't fun. So thinking of more as like bite-sized little adventures where you go out, get some things, come back, was a big part of like what we wanted to achieve with the pacing of it.
You summed it up well. I think for me, I was, one to keep it quite short, just because, like, you know, I just got a bit bored with it. I want to get back to my boys. I want to look after them. So when I was away from them too long, I get sad. So, kept it tight. And it just means that, you keep it more action-packed, punch size, you go do it, and it can be fun. If you die, because that's another big thing, if you spend 15 minutes on run and you die, it's just very frustrating as well. And you're like, oh, all right, I need to spend 15 minutes getting back to that like boss to fight it again. So if it's just under 10 minutes, you can kind of quickly do that, and you'll get some resources along the way. If you die, it's kind of like, it's not the end of the world. At least you learned something, hopefully.
Yeah, that was a big part of it, wasn't it? Where you would go for a long time and then die, and you'd lost like 15 minutes. And you come back to base and everyone's starving, but you haven't got any food, you haven't got any follower because you'd failed and spent all that invested time. It was like this negative feedback loop where it just got worse and worse and worse. So like, yeah, keeping it tight and punchy is a big part of like how you can sustain two games at one time.
Two games at once is a very great explainer of it, but I think they work so cohesively, and as you were saying, maybe it like took some time to nail it down, but what I really enjoyed, especially as I was first getting into the game and discovering sort of how much the management sim side of it opens up, and the more things that you have that can then inform how you're doing sort of in the dungeon runs and whatnot, there's a lot that you unlock, a lot that I think is very cute and darkly funny in a way that thematically ties into the cult of it all. But I was sort of curious of when building a management sim, when it's not the only part of the game, were there versions of it as you were iterating on everything that were like way too broad, or did you have to like broaden the scope? Did you start from like a narrow version of the sim? Like how did that evolve throughout time? Because I could imagine it going kind of either way.
I was hoping Julie would jump in because I don't have a great answer. One thing that happened was that during development, we would concentrate on one side of the game, and that would get really good. And then we'd kind of play, and the other side of the game hadn't had as much attention and love, and so really fell by the wayside. And so like working on two at once, it was quite hard to maintain a kind of equal level of quality or depth. But I think, and it's interesting that you say that, because I think in the demo that we put out, we kind of cut it off just before you can see how much base management there really is. And it does go really deep. And there is, if you want to, you read the minds of your followers, and they each have individual thoughts that get tracked, and you can really follow the story of each follower if you want to kind of put that time in. So it's very, very, very deep. Whereas the dungeon side, I think, is more kind of fun and arcadey. It's interesting thing that you pointed out there.
Yeah, I think it was hard as well, just because like we're making this like base builder side, but again, we couldn't really copy from too much, and we tried to originally, we were just like, oh, you know, we'll just kind of copy these other games for like the like how to do it, but it was quite hard because it all has to tie back to kind of you being a cult leader and trying to like tick those boxes and that player fantasy of running a cult. So yeah, it did make it a lot quite tricky, especially even just like managing followers, like how you tell them what to do and like what they should do. Like originally, like there was like a whole schedule and you could tell everyone what to do in the morning and the afternoon, and it got very deep. Basically, the whole process of this game was going very deep into systems and then like really simplifying them, and finding that just keeping everything simple. And as you say as well, like it takes a while to get in the game. And that's just because when we didn't have that, we found for new players, like it was just so overwhelming because there's just so many kind of things going on with all your doctrines and your rituals and sermons and then the old, yeah, building all these buildings and then tracking faith, hunger and illness. And it's like, whoa. And then you're also doing dungeon crawling. So yeah, it's, yeah, we slowly ease a player into all of that.
It's something that you mentioned a lot of the sort of like gameplay specifics there that I've been learning as I've been going through. And I, you know, like to the team's credit, I totally feel as a player, it's doled out in a really fair manner. Cause you, like you say, I think about some of the things that I was learning a couple hours in, and if all of that had been thrown at me from the start while I'm also doing all this dungeon crawling, it's a lot to handle. But as you get the hang of it, you're like, oh, I get how these systems can interact together and then can feed into when I'm going into the dungeon. So it sounds like it was a lot of putting all the ideas out there and then kind of reeling it back to see what made the most sense.
Yeah,
definitely. So much of the game is actually learning the game. Like I think at least the first hour, it takes at least an hour or so to get everything that's in there into the player's hands. So yeah, definitely the first hour or two is like just, oh, I can do this now. Oh, there's this. Oh, there's locations. Oh, I can fish. I can do the dice game. I can declare doctrines. Like I can put people in prison. And, you know, so it's this, just drip feeding that over a reasonable amount of time was a big part of getting that right.
I love you listing fishing, dice game, and putting people in prison as it feels like just spun a wheel and landed on three amazing parts of the game. But it's like it's what I've kind of loved about this game. Really, like for me as a player, delights me because of the discovery of it as you're going along. And you mentioned, I know the team has shown off a few of those mini games before of like dice and fishing and whatnot. But I guess how did the team either like decide to put in those mechanics? What were sort of like the thoughts about putting mini games into this? Because you've already got a pretty complex game going on. What were sort of the like interests in adding? I think they add a lot to the experience.
I think each thing has a different story behind it. I think it kind of comes from a sense of the way that we do things is because we all work remotely and we've all made games individually by ourselves before. There's a lot of independence and a kind of like someone kind of says, I think we should have fishing, and then goes off and does it. And then we then have to figure out how we're going to slot that into the game so that makes sense. And then with like the dice game, that was something I had like a day off and I just thought, I'm going to make how simple can I make a game? And then because we were making it in Unity, we were like, oh, actually we could plop this into Cult of the Lamb. And then we figured out, okay, well, how can we justify that narratively and fit it in with the world and then make a cohesive? But I think it's a lot of just like independent people making fun stuff and then bringing it in to the loop.
Do
you think that's fair?
I think it was kind of early on and I was like, this is when we had a bit more time, and I was, I think it was at the end of the month, and we're like, all right, everyone kind of, you know, do whatever you want for like a day or two or something. And Knucklebones, I think, was kind of the result of that. And then, yeah, the fishing, it's like we had this kind of like shore town, and it's just like, you know, I feel like the water was there. Like, we had to do it. Like, it would be like a disservice not to like add some fishing in there. And we're like, you know, we'll just chuck it in quickly. It'll be nice and easy. But yeah, that kind of, we're like, this turned into kind of this bigger, wider system that's kind of used in the food system quite a bit, and quite a few other things. So yeah. It's tricky because it does add a lot. Like, adds a lot of scope when you think, oh, you know, I'll just chuck in a quick mini game. But then it did end up being a lot of work for some of these things.
It's fair to say that there hasn't been a game design document that we've stuck rigidly to. There's been a lot of improvisation and iteration. So, yeah.
I mean, I think someone who landed on all of the things that are in this game from day one, I would just have to know how that brain works, because that would be incredible. I think like the sort of mishmash, I guess, of ideas here, for lack of a better term, I think benefits the experience so well, because it's constantly surprising you and you're finding delightful new things about it as you're going along. And You know, as for me personally, if there's a dice game in there, I'm going to spend way too much time playing it. So that's, you know, it's good by me. But, you know, on that sort of note of, I guess, building out the world or building out the scope of it, were there, you touched on it a little bit earlier, but were there certain thoughts or ideas beyond the aesthetics of like what people thought of the Adventure Pals, but were there certain ideas of like size of a game or direction of a game that coming off of that one, the team was really interested in exploring on this next project?
I think, yeah, just basically, as I don't know if Jay was kind of saying before, but yeah, we just wanted stuff where we could, like, it had replay value and it wasn't just like a one-off thing that you kind of experienced. So we originally, I think we kind of scoped out, like, I think it might have been four dungeons originally, actually. So we kind of got the original scope of what we wanted. But kind of like with the locations and these other areas in the game, we kind of wanted, yeah, you could go back there and there'd be like something different happening and it wasn't just a one-off thing. And maybe there's some little secrets around them. Who knows? Yeah, I think that kind of focusing on that with the scope, just everything you do, like, can you kind of replay it? Was a big thing. But yeah, again, a lot of it, we just didn't know what we were doing. We're like, oh, we know we want four dungeons. So we started doing it. But then like, I think a lot of it got scrapped in the end and kind of ended up in this kind of more simplified version. I think originally as well, we had this, like, we wanted to do this kind of big open world thing where it was a bit more of a like Stardew Valley thing where you could go around the world and you'd find these other areas, but it just was not working. So yeah, we've definitely tried a lot of bigger scope things. As I was saying with the other stuff, you know, we try these big things and then we strip it all back down again just to like being nice and simple.
You know, sort of on that note, I guess for me, especially the way the cult stuff is built into it, you talked a little bit about, you know, doctrines or things like you're collecting the devotion of your followers and all these things as you're going on. It's the, it builds very clever sorts of like, I guess, takes on religion or cultish behavior or something in a very mechanical gameplay sort of way and in fun and interesting ways. But I'm curious of like, obviously, to me, this is not like lampooning any specific cult or anything like that. Like you said, it feels broadly like Midsummer or things of that nature. How do you go, I guess, about, is it researching how, you know, cults have behaved and figuring out, oh, that makes a good game mechanic? Or like, how do you marry those two things together? Because it's just such an interesting combo for me.
Yeah, it was really difficult. I feel like I have a Google Doc that was just kind of like trying to figure out, all right, what actually is a cult? Like, what are the defining features of a cult? And just kind of making sure we tick each of those boxes. So I think there's like, you know, your charismatic leader, like that's pretty classic. That's that was fairly easy because we've got the lamb, that's the player. Kind of indoctrination, which we, yeah, didn't get to. I think we originally wanted to kind of explore that further, but we kind of got it in through, you know, you can customize them and then they have like levels. So if they are a bit lower and they're kind of hierarchy in the cult. And then kind of exploitation of the members was quite important. So I think it was this, for me, I wanted a lot of the game to be this balance of kind of like how much you can exploit the followers while keeping their faith at a decent level. So like trying to sacrifice them and, you know, get coins out of them or something while making sure they're happy and not getting too angry at you.
Yeah, it was definitely, as June said, constantly asking ourselves, oh, is this a cult? Because it was very easy to get kind of sidetracked by the farming and just make it like a cute village. And so, we had this kind of almost obligation to have ritualistic sacrifice and all these.
We had to. That was one of the things. I was like, in the trailer, I was like, we need to have someone getting sacrificed. Like, that's the minimum.
Yeah. It has to be core. And at one point, it was like, it just gave you some coins or something. And then we're like, it's not important enough. People aren't going to be doing it. We need. So there was a kind of this desire to I guess, the player experience, making sure they're having the experience that we promise by saying, hey, this is a game about running a cult. We've kind of got this obligation. And so now when you sacrifice, it helps you level up your character quicker, which you can do in a nice way by giving sermons, or you can sacrifice them and kind of like instantly level up. And so we're always trying to find ways. Yeah. Exploiting your followers was like absolutely core. And so finding ways where we could make you, not force you, but like give you the option to be evil, in a way that would benefit you at the expense of your cute followers. And so it was just that constant kind of desire to meet that.
I guess another example is like, yeah, when you die, you can kind of choose to, with one of the abilities you get, you can choose to kind of sacrifice someone to keep going. I think that's a really good kind of example of us trying to, you know, give you this question, this morality to the player, like, oh, do I want to kill one of my guys? But usually there's like one guy you don't really like that much. So it's not a problem, at least for me. I don't know.
I mean, they do all have go ahead.
I was just going to jump on that and say we even go further where if there's someone that you've married, you get more hearts for sacrificing them. So it's kind of like we're encouraging you to not only sacrifice a follower, but sacrifice a follower that you're married to. So just like whenever we could double down on those mechanics, we would. And before we knew it, we had this kind of deeply dark, twisted, but cute game.
I haven't done that yet, but that is a good, I guess, tip to know for the future, for my future.
Yeah, yeah. A tip for the fans.
Five things I wish I knew before I started.
this is basically a guide interview. We're just helping get tips introducing play. No, I it's something that I think was a really funny like joke to me the first time you got a follower, even was just like the instinctual, their dialogue is kind of like, please, you know, bring me into the cult. I will work for you. I'll do everything that you need me to. And then immediately it's like, yeah, just go chop some wood. I need you to go just get some stone for me. Go get some stuff. And, you know, it builds into, as you both have been alluding to, this management sim where you're trying to make sure people are happy. You're trying to make sure their faith stays up. You're trying to feed them. You're trying to give them all these things to, you know, make sure the cult is running well. But that then also feeds into your abilities and your ability to progress further in the story and the dungeon running and all that sort of stuff. It's a really great balance and sort of cycle that feeds into itself that the team landed on that I've been really loving so far. And I hope people do when they get to play.
Yes. Great to hear.
Before we wrap up and I throw back to the rest of the episode, I do have sort of a couple things you did mention, you know, obviously don't want to spoil any of them, but there are secrets to this game and things to discover in the joy of that. And, you know, I'm curious of, in building a game that is, you have this base, but then you also have these areas you're going to that are roguelike and all of that. Do secrets that you build into, is it sort of like the team has ideas that they want certain things to be discoverable for people? Or is it as you're going along, you know, as you've said, maybe it wasn't there day one, but, oh, we have a neat idea for a thing to put in there. And we hope people have fun discovering this aspect.
I think, I think it's about layering. So, some really good advice we got from Devolver when we first started with them was when you're making a game, get to the end as soon as possible and then go back and sort of layer it in. And so what's kind of nice about our team, again, is the independence. So we might be working on one thing while, for example, the other day I was working on something completely different and I actually discovered a secret that Julian had put in that I had no idea about. And so it's that kind of like, yeah, that sort of freedom to add in, you think, oh, that would be cool. I'm just going to do it. Which gives like a lot of independence, very quick to do. And it just means that, yeah, there's secrets that are being layered in all the time. I think there's not a lot of, we knew we wanted secrets and we knew that was a big part of games like this. But it was never kind of like, okay, here's 10 secrets that we're going to implement this week sort of thing. It was more about like layering it in over time and as we were playing.
Yeah. Yeah. We want to get like more in as well as we kind of, as the game's out, like just cause yeah, we had to just get it done at some point. So we're going to be, working on it for quite a bit after release, just kind of, again, layering in more things for players to find. I think it's interesting with it as well. I remember I just kind of drew this character that I thought was cool that I think I chucked it in like one of the locations. And I think originally it didn't even do anything, or maybe I set it up to like sacrifice a dude to him. But it wasn't set up very well. And then I think, yeah, Jay just went in and came up with this whole story and all these other things. It's just kind of that iterative approach as well. Yeah, of some... Oh, spoilers, Jay. No, Jay.
We promise spoilers. Just
that approach, like, here's an idea. Someone will kind of have a rough idea and then someone else might run with it as well, which is great.
Yeah.
That's awesome to hear because I've enjoyed everything that I've been able to discover so far while playing, but it feels like a game where it's just going to kind of be, you know, that joy of finding out what else can I discover in this world. And I think the team did a really awesome job creating something that I kind of can't stop playing when I have the time to. And, you know, we're talking about it right now, but I think about it while I'm working as well. So I'm excited to I know, as we're recording, your guys' day is just starting, mine's ending. So after it ends, I'm going to play some more.
Nice.
But no, it's been really a blast. I hope people go check it out. Before we end, I do have to ask, because it's so adorable, I've seen sort of the plushy version of it and it just works so perfectly. Was it always a lamb? Was the cult of any other animal?
As soon as we kind of started going in the cult direction, I kind of knew, yeah, let's do a lamb. I think originally the working title of the game was Sacrificial Lamb. And it was just that, like, this, like, the lamb just works so perfectly because, you know,
absolutely,
he's the one that's usually, you know, going to sacrifice, but now he has the power and he's taking it on. But there's this question of, like, you know, will he keep this, like, holy, I don't know, imagery that he has, or will he kind of be twisted to the decisions he makes and get the power get to him and kind of end up as this kind of evil character? So, yeah.
It fits pretty perfectly and sets you up for a, as we've said, a fun and very cute but disturbing in its own way, but fun and funny experience. So Julian and Jay, thank you so much for joining me to talk about Cult of the Lamb. Congrats to the team. I know we're just about to hit launch, but congrats to you all on the launch. And I hope everyone out there enjoys it as much as I did.
Thanks so much. Thanks so much for having us. It's been so much fun chatting to you.
Of course, yeah, it's been a joy, and I hope we'll get to talk again in the future, but congrats to the team, and we'll throw back to the rest of the episode. And we're back. Thank you, Jonathan.
I had to do it.
No, that's fair.
What an interview, Jonathan. That was amazing.
Thank you, Mitchell. We did sit here and watch it.
Mm-hmm.
I forced you all to do that. Isn't that great for a podcast?
And, you know, I didn't have anything else to do today. So.
Yeah, that's fair. It's not like we're all in the middle of our workday. Anyway, before we wrap up on things, I do want to briefly pull a couple comments from last week that Jada brought together from last week's show, though does not have a computer in front of her.
Nope. So Jonathan's going to do his best impression of me right now. Just kidding.
I can't do impressions. The only impression I can do, actually, that I've learned is I'm not bad at a Dalek from Doctor Who.
Fun.
Yeah.
What an oddly specific impression.
Exterminate. There you go. That's it. Anyway, writing in from last week's show, Elle said, responding to a particular conversation where Mark decided to test people's smart AIs at home, I have an Amazon Echo Dot, thank you for not saying the name of the character who uses that, directly under my monitor, and I have the listening turned off for just such occasions. Better luck next time, Mark.
Yeah, I was really hoping he was going to be here for that one. That was, I pulled that comment yesterday and didn't have a chance to grab a different one since he wasn't going to be here. But it still works.
It still does.
We're just going to clip this part and we're going to send it to him.
Send it to him while he can watch it on the top of Splash Mountain.
Yep, exactly.
Speaking of Mark comments, James wrote in and said, Mark, I've been waiting for PlayStations to end up on store shelves, which hasn't happened, but PlayStation sent me an email saying that you can sign up for a chance to purchase a console directly from them. I tried once like 6 months ago and I did not get through before they all sold out. But last week they sent me up another chance and it was a quick, painless experience, and I'm now part of the PS5 family. Congratulations, James. Also, as a bit of hope for others, I logged back on a while later, and they still had inventory, so this is a good sign for PlayStation. Yeah, we've started to hear inventory coming back. It's being a little bit of a thing for people. If you're not signed up for PlayStation Direct, go ahead and do that. I definitely recommend it. I know some people have had spotty luck on there, but I've also seen, like, you might have to buy a
bundle.
Thank you. A bundle for like Horizon, but chances are if you're buying a PlayStation, you should play Horizon.
I should have thrown another word in there, like a jumpsuit
or something, just to mess with you. You can buy a life-size Astro Robot, but you can't buy a PS5. I would buy that. Anyway, thank you, James, for letting us know that worked out for you. Congrats. Hope you're enjoying that PS5. Speaking of Astro, play Astro's Playroom. And last but not least, from all the comments and emails and everything we've gotten, Callum wrote in to beyond@IGN.com like you can and said, hey, it's Callum again from the UK. Just wanted to chime in on the long, short video game conversation from last week. Two games that I feel are the perfect length are Little Nightmares 1 and 2. I think these games are scary, action-packed, and stunning visually. It's crazy to me they can be so good, considering all you do is walk from the left side of the screen to the right until you finish them, of course, while running away from scary things. The video game Inside also has a great length to it and left me wanting more. When it's on sale, I've seen it go for less than £5. I believe, or I don't think it's the euro sign, but I could be wrong. What a steal. Thanks, guys. And thank you, Kellen, for the recommendations. The Little Nightmares games are very good lengthwise. Those are like great 4 to 5 hour-ish spookies, and they're fun.
I feel like Callum has the type, and if they haven't played Limbo, they should play Limbo.
I should also play, I had another game and then I completely forgot it. But yes, I agree. Limbo is great. I actually like Limbo more than Inside, but I know that's
actually kind of do too.
Controversial around these parts. Mm. Don't let Ryan McCaffrey hear this. Anyway, briefly before we move on to sort of the end of the show, anything that you want to shout out, Jade, I'll start with you that you've been playing that we haven't, I know we talked about multiverses, but anything else?
I just finished my first playthrough for Nobody Saves the World.
I did too.
Such an excellent.
I reviewed that game.
Such an excellent little RPG. I had so much fun with it. Like all the different forms. Like I really was invested in doing all the challenges to level up my form. I didn't. There was only a very few challenges where I was like, ugh, I have to do this to level it up. But most of them are just so done so well. And I've started my new game plus run already. And I love the new dungeon layouts or stipulations where they all have these different modifiers. And it's kind of like a puzzle. It's like, okay, you got to figure out which form is best in this dungeon with these modifiers and what layout, what setup you need to do for this one. Like there's dungeons where it's 9,999 damage for everybody. And so it's like, okay, well I just have to equip the perk that I can only take 1/6 of my health. Like, cool. That problem is solved. And then there's other ones where they'll add on to it. Like, you can't regain mana. So it's like, okay, now I got to figure out how am I gaining mana for my specials and then how am I healing? Like, it's just done so well. And it's such a great way to really draw players back in for a new game plus playthrough.
Yeah, I beat it. I haven't started that run, but I enjoyed it. I know, Mitchell, you reviewed it, as you were saying earlier. I believe you gave it a 7. You enjoyed it earlier this year. And yeah, I totally agree with some of your criticism of, like, it feels like it gets a little long in the tooth toward the end.
Mm-hmm.
I think, like, the form switching and the swapping stuff is really smart and clever. And I, like, for them attempting a totally new game, this is the Guacamelee devs, Severed, a very new different genre and format for them. I thought this was like a really, it's very pretty also as well to play through, like to not say the same things you all said that I agree with. Jada, mm-hmm. I thought like it's also a really delightful game to look at and watch and play out and have the form switches happening and just the silly sort of like animations that they all do. It's a lot of fun. I definitely recommend it for people. Mm-hmm. I think it's been on sale a bit recently. Mitchell, what about you? What have you been playing?
We just watched an interview about it.
In real time.
But in real time. Cult of the Lamb, I would say I'm probably about like 6 hours into that game. And I really like it. Nice. I think it's more than you would expect. You look at that game and be like, oh, this is like, you know, a roguelike almost like Hades and you know, those other combat focused.
Kind of gives a Binding of Isaac kind of vibe.
Yeah,
almost.
Very Binding of Isaac-y. But the roguelite element, I feel like, is secondary to the base management stuff.
Yeah.
And it's a really interesting combination where, you know, you're doing the base management stuff to do better in the roguelite stuff. And, you know, you're going on like farming runs so you can get materials to make new buildings and, you know, you're getting new followers to bring back so you can put them to work doing more things in your base. So it's just a really interesting, you know, interplay between those two very disparate genres. I'm enjoying my time with it so far.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's one of those things where, yeah, I don't want to like undersell or oversell, I guess, but don't go into it thinking of it as a like a roguelike that you're going to really dive into on the runs mm-hmm. as your core focus. Like to Mitchell's point, mm-hmm. the base building is a really big part of it and getting, you know, building that up, getting your followers to care more about you, getting new like things to build there and assets and all the stuff that you need to build. That's a really big chunk of the game. I've been enjoying the like building and the growth process of that.
Yeah. It's also just amusing. You can like set doctrines so that like, you know, your followers are no longer repulsed by the idea of sacrifice.
I was going to ask about the sacrifice. Like, are the different followers you enlist, do they have like different stats or different things like that? And then like the ones you don't like, you just sacrifice them to the gods?
They do have perks, and there are like one of the perks could be like, you know, they're harder to level up. So if you want to, yeah, you can absolutely
nice.
You know, just get rid of people that you don't like.
Sacrifice all of them.
Oh, well, you need some of them. Someone's got to clean up the poop. That's a real part.
Yeah. That's true.
You can also feed the poop to people, which is real weird. Sometimes they want it.
I mean,
sometimes they demand it.
I don't put anything past cults.
Don't kink shame those animals, Mitchell. The yeah,
there's it's poop in the punch.
it's a really fun sort of interesting balance between that light and dark humor as well, because it really does lean into like how did the ideas of a cult become a management sim, and as Mitchell was saying, like what doctrines do you place out? You give sermons to help like elevate people and all this sort of, you're like stealing their, not desires, I forget what the exact word is, but you're using their sort of observances and using that to build up and whatnot. It's really clever and really cute and a lot of fun. Also for people who play on PC, it's going to be on PlayStation as well, but you play on PC, it's got like cool streaming integration where you can have like your followers name your followers and stuff like
that.
Oh,
that's so cool.
It's
oh,
really
cool.
Cute.
I would just name all of my followers in Cult of the Lamb after my followers.
I think you're like the people watching you can basically like bid to name and customize. So yeah,
oh, that's real cool.
That's so
know that.
Cool.
That's awesome.
I've been playing, but I might restart a run and stream it because I'm like, this is a fun thing to be able to do.
Yeah.
But apologies to whoever I sacrifice.
I just that's funny. Sacrifice no, everybody still.
I just saw on the video you can put dissenters of your religion in the stocks. I have not had that happen yet.
Yeah, it's really cool and really clever, and I definitely recommend.
Check them in.
There's another one.
Whew. Someone needs to tweet me a running tally of all the words I messed up.
Hey, you miss 100% of the word combinations you never take.
The word binations. Yeah, anyway, Nobody Saves the World, Cult of the Lamb. I think that covers it for me. Oh, and I started my Persona 5 Strikers run, and I'm getting into that, and I'm enjoying it so far, but I'm very early on, so I'll report back in.
Yeah, I think the only thing other than I've been playing, obviously, Multiverses, but I put some more time into Digimon Survive. Really yes. Liking the story, the visual novelness of it. I know I talked about it last week. It was a little slow.
Yeah.
But that was like the first couple hours are very slow. But once you get past that, it gets really good. The combat still is just kind of bleh, but yeah. Whatever. It's a visual novel.
Well, thank you for that update, and I'm curious to hear more if you keep playing. But my watch told me it's almost time to stand up, so I'm going to start winding down the show because apparently I need to stand for my health. But before we do, I have a memory card for us to read. Memory card, of course, is our weekly segment where you, the viewers and listeners at home, write in with your sad, weird, happy, wacky, whatever memories of your PlayStation gaming life, and we read them on the show. This week's comes in from Jorge, who wrote in to beyond@ign.com with a memory card / combination first date game recommendation. So back in 2004, Jorge writes, I got a call from a friend to help out another friend during Carnival. She was home during Brazil's biggest holiday because she had broken her leg. He told me this girl owned a PS2 and that I should bring some games. I packed up my stuff and we both visited her house. Nothing wrong with sharing some gaming and making someone's day a little brighter, right? Soon after introducing ourselves, she challenged me to a few rounds of King of Fighters 2002, speaking of fighting games. I picked my usual team, Iori, Joe, and Ryo, and she picked hers, Whip, Kula, and Billy Kane. The match starts. I jump in with a flying kick from Joe, and she proceeds to counter me with Whip, picking my character in midair and striking him against the floor. Against, not again. I tried a few more attacks, but this woman was untouchable, and it's like she's reading my mind. I lost the first round, and she was barely damaged. The fight concluded at 3-2 in her favor. We played a couple of extra matches, followed by Tekken 4, winning 11, and a few others. We bonded and became instant friends over our shared love of video games. The years would bring us shared playthroughs of Kingdom Hearts, all three, Dragon Age, Mass Effect, Assassin's Creed, the entire series except for the first one, and many more. Fast forward to the present, and we've been happily married for 15 years. We have a 7-year-old girl with whom we play retro and current games on an almost daily basis. I'm living the dream of getting to actually marry the coolest person ever. She's also a professional chef right now, and we have recently bought a PS5 with Miles Morales and Demon's Souls. And to think it started with a match of King of Fighters 2002. And as a final comment, which is not related to the story, I've been listening to the show since the Greg Cullen PS3 days. Regardless of who the hosts are, Beyond continues to be a source of information, witty banter, and hilarious comments from its participants. It's a pleasure to tag along and listen to the show through the years in my daily commute. And thank you. You said some very other wonderful things that I don't want to read out loud because they are navel-gazing, in my opinion, to me. And I'm embarrassed to say nice things about myself to me.
It says Jonathan is hot.
Well, no, it doesn't get there. Hot. But it also commends the whole cast. Mitchell, if you want to take the line about me, I'll say the rest of the line.
Jonathan, you're a fantastic host, and I'd like to congratulate you on your excellent work. Please make sure you share my appreciation and hugs. Hugging is a huge thing here in Brazil. It's the number one way we show affection to people. With the rest of the team, Brian, Max, Lucy, Tom, Jada, Mark, and Red, I love your work, and I wish everyone plenty of success. Stay safe, stay healthy, and take care.
And of course, though you weren't in that list, Mitchell, I consider you a part of the Beyond family as well.
Oh.
But yeah, thank you, Jorge, for writing in with that lovely story. Congratulations to you both on a wonderful, long, and happy relationship together. But that is going to pretty much wrap us up for this week's episode. Before we leave, Jada, anything you want to plug that you're working on with the community? Or...
No, nothing really. I mean, I guess I can plug my most recent community, Let's Talk About. We're talking about the best fighting games of all time. So that article's up on IGN. So definitely stop in if you want to make your voice heard on IGN. Drop in, drop a comment.
And speaking of fighting games, we are just publishing today our top 10 fighting games piece, which Mitchell, I know you contributed to, as did Ronnie and a few other wonderful staffers and freelancers. So go check that out if you want some of the best fighting games of all time. Some would say even the 10 best.
And if you disagree, I challenge you to a burst of 10 in Guilty Gear Strive.
Hell yeah. Mitchell, anything else you want to plug that you've been working on, or just coming back from Evo, fresh off?
Just coming back from Evo, I think a lot of the things that I'm working on probably aren't going to see the light of day for a few weeks, so...
Yeah. Fair enough.
Stay tuned.
And I'll just say, I don't want to reveal quite what it is yet, but my next Art of the Level should be hitting in the next few days, and it is related to a very big PlayStation game, so I hope you all check it out. I'll talk about it on next week's show. But a lot of work went into it, a lot of wonderful interviews from some great devs at the studio involved, and I hope you all check it out when we do it. But
is it Jet Moto?
Is it Vibribbon?
You'll have to tune in to find out. But anyway, that's going to do it for us on this week's episode of Podcast Beyond. Jada, thank you so much for joining me in studio. Good to see you.
Of course.
And Mitchell, thank you for joining us from afar. It's good to have you here. And as always, thank you to Red, our producer, for making this show happen. And thank you to everyone out there for listening and watching. We hope you're doing well. We hope you're staying safe. We hope you got through all of the messed up words that I said. And as always, beyond.
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 Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am extremely excited to invite you to Rachel Uncensored. It's my podcast where I sit down and get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. And sometimes we might be under the influence when we do so. We cover things from personal stories to hot button issues. And it's the only place on the internet you can find an uncensored version of me. It's a side of me that you might not have seen before because it's not the most family or brand friendly. But don't worry, I'm still sort of slightly a decent human being. If you're intrigued, then make sure you check it out. New episodes drop every Wednesday. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.